You're listening to Dramas Over Flowers with Saya, Anissa and Boromir. Hi, I'm Saya.
I'm Anissa, and today we have a very special guest, our friend Yuna, who works in film and lives in Tokyo.
Hi, this is Yuna.
Hi, Yuna.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's been a while since you've been on the podcast. Good to have you back.
It's always great to be back. Thanks for not forgetting me.
Oh, never.
A few things have changed for you since the last time we talked to you. Do you want to quickly tell us where you are right now?
Yeah, so as Anissa mentioned, I'm now in Tokyo. I've relocated from New Jersey, and I'm settling in.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Saya and I are stuck in our same old stomping grounds, but we're living vicariously through your travels.
I'm very grateful to be stuck in the same place, frankly. It's comfy here, apart from being cold.
So we wanted to talk about one of my favorite movies this year.
He was just this kid in my head for such a long time. I think I just missed him.
Did he miss you?
Hae-sung! Wow, 너다.
Wow.
Really sure how to feel about it, son. And the way you move makes me feel like I can't live without you.
그냥 너랑 얘기하는 거?
The guy flew 13 hours to be here. I'm not going to tell you that you can't see him or something.
Past Lives came out in the summer. It's directed by Celine Song. It's like a semi-autobiographical, fictionalized story about her, you know, about leaving Korea, migrating to Canada, and then like the protagonist moves to New York for work and is kind of has this journey of reconnecting with someone from her childhood. And then there's this feeling of like, okay, so what about my past? What did I leave behind? What have I built here? And it's really just a beautiful kind of and melancholy exploration of what it is to be an immigrant. Did I miss anything?
No, indeed. I think that was a really lovely summation of the film. Past Lives is one of the most highly anticipated films for me because I had read the script and I loved it. It was such a page turner and I was so excited to see what that movie would look like. And when I watched it, I thought it was very delicate, complex, and it felt both big and small at the same time. And I don't know how you feel about this, Anissa, but I feel like, you know, there are a bunch of Asian American projects, and for some reason, very few of them have ever resonated with me. 'Cause I feel like sometimes they're made for an audience that isn't Asian American or like doesn't really understand the Asian American experience. But I felt that Past Lives was that one project that nailed it.
Absolutely.
And I hope we can see more Asian American projects that do it right.
I have to ask, Yuna, how did you come to read the script? That's really cool.
I have my ways.
Industry people.
have their private channels.
interesting that you bring that up. I agree. There's definitely been more Asian American projects that have gotten a lot of, you know, press and a lot of and have seen a lot of success, which is like really exciting to see. And like, you know, we don't all have to relate to every story. I think that's like the beauty of having more than one, right? It's like you can be free not to love all of them. But yeah, I think this one, I was reading an interview with Celine Song and she was saying that like she made it for herself because she said like, I'll be so much more critical of my own work than anyone else would be. But also like making it for yourself means that like you're telling the story that you want to tell, right? You're not kind of being like, okay, so what will mainstream audiences want to see from a story like mine? And you're not having to like put yourself in that box of like commercially viable, quote unquote, which comes along with so many assumptions, which aren't necessarily true about like what people want to see and what's going to sell. And, you know, and it is very much often premised on like what white people want to watch and, and sort of like what the imagination of like what an immigrant narrative is. I also love that it kind of subverts what you expect to happen, which like let's talk about that later. But Saya, you tell us how you felt about the movie.
I didn't do any homework before coming to this, so I did not read any interviews. But you saying that that Celine Song said that reminded me that when I, like, you know, you turn the last page of the film, which is not what you do in films, but you turn the last page and you're like, oh, I wish I had written this. That's how I felt at the end. Just like, this, I wish I had written this. And like, that's kind of, I feel like, the highest compliment that you can give to a work that
it is.
As a creative, you connect to it so much that it feels like it came out of you. But it wasn't you, but someone captured this in this total, like, brilliant perfection. It's just, yeah, I've lost my words. But but the other thing also is that, like, immediately as the film opens, like, you know, with that cold open and that, like, narrative framing device of, like, a third person watching this sort of tableau, this vignette of the three of them sitting at the bar. From that moment, I knew it was going to be a good film. And you don't usually, like, I don't know how to explain what I mean, but I'm sure you understand, and I'm sure anyone who's seen it understands what I mean as well. Just the choices that were made in how they opened that tells you that this is going to be a sensitive, thoughtful, deep film.
Yeah, and that open actually happened to Celine. And I think that was the seed of her inspiration for this film, because she was actually at a bar, a speakeasy in New York, with her childhood sweetheart and her now husband. And that's what you see in the movie. That's how the movie opens.
And that ability to take yourself out of the scene and look in and try to interpret it as an outsider, like, the complexity of not being able to interpret it, or being able, or pulling out like 12 different interpretations and none of them are right, because it's too difficult to just look at and understand what's happening. And then it takes you the whole film to get to that moment. It was so good.
So good. And it's like what you were saying, you know, about how it's big and small at the same time. I think we talk often about like universality through specificity, but being able to do that really well, I think, is a talent, which like she does all of it through performance and dialogue, right? There's no voiceover in this movie. And I feel like a lot of times films like this lean on voiceover, especially when it's like the story of someone's life. But here, like, all of the work is done through silence and dialogue. And that's really, I mean, I think it was easier to, so I watched it again yesterday, the first time I saw it, and it was in the theater. And I definitely felt like the slower pace more when I was sitting at home and there's like a lot of distractions around. Whereas like while I was in the theater, I was able to like fully immerse myself in the experience and just like feel the silences when people are just like, you know, sitting in a feeling or like staring at each other or like thinking about what they're gonna say next. But it felt so real. And the dialogue, there were moments where I was just like, oh, that went straight into my heart.
I was gonna say that this movie reveals a lot through, like you said, dialogue, silence, and lingering glances. And it makes you kind of watch it at the edge of your seat because you don't want to miss those tiny moments that just say so much about these two people who have changed throughout their lives and meet like much later as like different people. I totally agree with you.
It had that sort of epic but intimate thing going. You know what it reminds me of? And I'm sorry if you're not Veronica Mars people, but you know, there's this one really very epic scene where the love interest, I'm just going to say the names because if you've watched it, you've watched it. Like Logan, who is Veronica's ex-boyfriend at this point, he has this speech which has been quoted to death, but it's because it's amazing, where he's like, I thought our love was going to be epic, you know, spanning years and continents, hearts broken, bloodshed, all of that. And this is after it's over. It's like that great love that never was or couldn't be for whatever reason. And it's just, it's that.
What did you make of, Ayuna, what did you make of this concept of inyeon that just kind of is threaded through the movie and like multiple people bring it up? Like, first of all, could you give us, I know it's like not easy to translate to English, but can you give us like a rough idea of what inyeon means?
Ooh.
For the pop quiz.
No. It is a very familiar concept in Korean, and you see this concept play out in many Korean dramas, but it's this idea that whoever you meet, and meet can mean a million different things, even if it's someone you like brush against as you're walking past them, you and that person have an innate connection that spans multiple years and centuries and layers and decades.
And past lives.
And past lives. Yeah. So I feel like I butchered that definition, but it is this kind of romantic notion that we're all connected in some way. And we were always connected from the start, and we will continue to be connected by this thread.
Mm. I think that was beautifully said.
Oh my gosh. You're too kind.
So, like, what did you make of how it was used in the film and, like, how it was kind of a... Because I feel like it has so many layers, even the way that it's used in between these three main characters.
I thought it was used well in the film. I was kind of worried that it might come across as too cliche, but I thought it was very subtle. And it made me think about, you know, all of the relationships that I have, and it made me wonder about people that were a large presence in my life, maybe like 5 or 10 years ago, but I've lost contact with them. And then it made me think, oh, maybe I haven't really lost touch with them, actually, if inyeon exists. But I really did love the concept of inyeon through this film. I thought it was subtly done. It wasn't cliche. And it made sense for the film and what it wanted to do. I really love this line that Nora's mom said in Korean. And I think she said something like, when you leave something behind, you gain something. And I think that's such a nice line to depict this movie, because it makes me wonder whether what you left behind was worth it for what you ended up gaining, and whether or not what you gained was worth the sacrifices that were made. And I feel like that's something that a lot of immigrant families ponder about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something that we can all feel, right, as like children of immigrants ourselves. Mm-hmm. Saya?
But also more broadly, because like this is how you live life, isn't it?
Mm.
You are constantly making choices about about everything, but also big things like who you're going to be with, who you spend your time with. And, you know, as much as like love is an avalanche, it's also something that you choose. Like you choose to invest your emotions and time and commitment into somebody. And those choices can be trade-offs. Like sometimes it's easy and there aren't any things that you have to give up. And I think the story of the film is... It is this. It's you've made your choices and then like you get shaken and you have an opportunity to change your mind and go in a different direction. But, you know, it's interesting that for a film about inyeon, it's so much about your own choices and your own agency. and what you choose to keep in your life and what you choose to sacrifice while knowing the cost. And I think this is also what comes out really strongly to me in the ending, which we are not talking about yet, but it's Nora understanding the choice that she's made, and that's where her emotions come from. Because as much as she has chosen what she's chosen, she knows what she's given up. Mm-hmm. And that is a source of grief for her, even if she's content with the choice she's made. Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean she can't have that grief. Like, feelings. We have them. They're complicated, but you find a way to live with them.
Yeah, I feel like I personally am the type of person that, like, sticks to something, makes a choice, and tells myself not to look back.
Yeah, same. Mm.
Me too.
But I do oftentimes dwell on the what ifs because I can't help it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you said, life is a series of choices. And these choices are definitely trade-offs because, you know, based on the decision that you made, your life could have gone so many different ways. And I feel like we're human, so we always wonder, like, what are those different paths that our lives could have taken had we made X choice instead of Y, instead of Z?
Yeah.
So I feel like that aspect is so relatable.
I think this is where the idea of, it's not exactly inyan, I would say, as a Muslim, like, our, we have a specific set of beliefs about, like, fate. And in Arabic, that's, like, it's called qadr. It's not exactly fate. It's similar to inyan in some ways. It's similar to fate in some ways. But this idea that there are things in your life that are meant to happen, and your choices will take you there. It's not that you aren't choosing, but there are, like, certain, I guess, stations, like immovable points in your life that you will get to somehow. And so there's a certain contentment that comes with, you know, like, whatever choice I have made, this is where it would have brought me. Or I'm not quite sure how to put it, but, like, there's a sense of security knowing, like, and I know a lot of people don't believe this and they don't agree with this, but, like, that this was meant, this is where I'm meant to be. This is what I was meant to do. This is, like, all of the choices in my life have added up to bring me to this point. Mm-hmm. And just while you were talking about, like, inyan and the things that people do to get there, I was just remembering the story about a friend of mine I went to uni with, and how she was somehow always dating a person called Andy, just by accident, not by design.
Not always the same Andy.
Not always the same Andy, but they were always called Andy. But eventually, she married Andy. But, like, you know, it's like the universe is hiccuping. It's trying to get you onto the track. Each of those Andys was to get her to the Andy that, like, the end game Andy, do you know? And I have a personal story. Should I tell it? Yes, I'll tell it. So I have a family member who was getting married many years ago at this point. And in the process of, you know, like, the family's meeting for, this is like this whole rishta process where you meet a potential partner, the parents meet and they talk about it. So my dad was on his way to meet the dad of a girl who had been sort of not introduced to us. But, you know, you get these biodatas, these, like, sheets of somebody's personal profile, which is very boring and uninformative. So we received two at the same time for my brother. And my dad was like, let's meet them both. So the day that he was meant to meet one of them, he actually sort of injured his back and he wasn't able to go. In the end, my brother married the second one. And months later, me and my sisters were like, let's see what happened to that girl. So we did what you did back then, which is stalk them on Facebook. And her profile picture was her wedding day. And I'm telling you, she was with my brother. We were like, that's Baya. How? The man she had married looked exactly like my brother. Like, exactly. And it was just, we were, like, shook. And we were sitting there going, you know, like the way that circumstances had worked out, my dad was physically prevented from going to meet her dad that day. She ended up marrying someone who looked exactly like my brother. I'm telling you, we couldn't tell the difference.
Wow.
That, like, that's when you think, ah, Inyon, Khadr, whatever you want to think.
There's something bigger going on here. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's like, there's a plan. There's the universe having its hiccup, getting you onto the right track, and each hiccup gets you closer to where you're meant to be. So, yeah, that story just still blows my mind. I can still see it in my head. No difference. We could not tell. We who, you know, saw our brother every day, we couldn't tell that it wasn't our brother until we looked really, really closely.
Wow.
Mad.
That is mad. Should we go into spoilers?
만약에 네가 한국을 떠나지 않았다면 내가 널 찾았을까? 우리가 사귀었을까? 헤어졌을까? 부부가 됐을까? 아이들을 가졌을까?
너는 나를 왜 찾았어?
한 번 더 보고 싶었어.
If two strangers walk by each other in the street and their clothes accidentally brush, that means there have been 8,000 layers of Inyon between them.
Want you to stay. Want you to stay.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically. I have some like amazing lines that I want to talk about.
So many amazing lines.
So many amazing lines. Before we get to like specific lines of dialogue, one of the things that I noticed both times that I watched the movie is like you don't really get a full conversation in English until about 40 minutes into the movie. Before that, you know, it's Na-young who becomes Nora in Korea with her family and, you know, with young Hae-sung, who's the boy, like her first love. And then you see them like briefly on the plane, her and her sister are like practicing their English with each other.
But I'm fine. And you?
I'm fine. And you? That was hilarious.
And repeat.
And because that's such a thing, right?
It's like, such a
that
thing.
That is what people do. And it's not just Korean speakers. Like, you know, Bengali speakers do this. I'm fine. Thank you. And you. I'm fine. Thank you. And you. And it just
Yeah, it's like
going.
That very rote kind of how you, when you're exactly. first learning how to speak English. This is like, they're like, this is how you say, you know, how
it's
are you?
In the textbooks.
Exactly. But like the first real conversation. So like you see her, she grows up. Then like you see her like very briefly having a discussion with her her writing group in New York. Mm-hmm. But like it's very much like an in the background kind of scene setting conversation. Right. It's not like a real interaction where you're like in the scene. And then she's talking to her mom on the phone in Korean. And then she's talking to Hae-sung over like many months, however long that, you know, reunion period is when they're Skyping each other, which like was so nostalgic.
Can we talk about like, the nostalgia?
Yeah,
the
like that like 2010-11 like Skype era was that sound of like the Skype
that
ringing.
Sound,
oh,
it
that
took
sound
me
was
back.
So familiar.
Yeah.
And like the video,
the
which was kind of like
window.
Freezing. Yeah.
The buffering Wi-Fi. Yeah.
And then the first real conversation that she has in English is with Arthur, who she ends up getting married to later on. So I just thought that was really interesting how you have this like first. It's not like that's all her life only in Korea. It's her life until, you know, through a lot of other things that happened to her when she's already become more fluent in English than she is in Korean. But it's such a, I don't know. What did y'all think about that choice?
What an astute observation. And when you mentioned it, like, you're right, we don't hear her speak English until much later in the film when she's at that writer's, you know, residency. And like you said, it wasn't a conversation that was in focus. It was just a couple lines just to convey the fact that she was like discussing her stories with other playwrights at that residency. I thought that was so subtle and well done.
I think it's really interesting that like you have this first portion of the movie where you only see her speaking Korean. And then later on, after a whole bunch of stuff has happened, closer to the end of the movie, I think, you have that conversation with Nora and Arthur lying in bed after she has met.
I love that.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
I love that scene. It's my favorite scene, yeah.
And, you know, it's after they've had that conversation in the bathroom when they're getting ready for bed. Mm-hmm. And he's like, do you think he's attractive? Like,
yeah.
And then she like kind of talks about him for a while. And he's like, so when is he leaving again?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, can so understand how he's feeling in that moment.
Of course, yeah.
And so then they're having this conversation and he's like, do you regret being with me? And mm-hmm. like our ordinary life together, is this really what you wanted? And she's like, are you asking if you're my family's immigrant dream?
Mm-hmm.
That was just...
That was so funny.
Yeah. You can tell that like the playwright or the screenwriter has had these conversations in real life because they feel very... true to life.
Yeah.
But then there's that whole part where he's like confesses to her that the reason that he's trying to learn Korean is that she sleep talks in Korean and he doesn't understand. And he says,
you dream in a language,
language I can't understand.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's this whole part of you that I can't, you know, access.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like
gutting.
So yeah, it's like heartbreaking in a way because mm-hmm. there's like the thing when you leave behind. And I mean, I guess I am a first generation immigrant. I left Canada to come to the US, but that like to me that doesn't really count in the same way as like leaving a place that has a totally different language and culture and going to a place where you have to like relearn everything in a way, mm-hmm. right? And so like that part of your life gets left behind. And it's kind of, you know, I was talking to one of my professors in grad school at like an event. And it kind of stayed with me where she's also Korean American. And she was saying, you know, like we're always talking because if you're in this field of like, you know, talking about diaspora and immigration and like mm-hmm. cultural studies and like we're always talking about like the beauty of like when two cultures come together and the creativity
right.
and how it makes you like a more empathetic person and how you can learn so much about the human condition when like, you know, cultures come together. And I mean, all of that is true. But she was saying, like, the older I get, I also understand how there's just, like, a real sadness to being part of the diaspora where, like, you don't really feel like you belong anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can't really go back home and be of that place completely.
Mm-hmm.
But the place that you've made your home is also not fully your home. And that's,
right.
like, never really going to change, at least
mm-hmm.
not for, you know, first, second, maybe even third generation people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a real, there's a real grief to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a real kind of irreconcilable feeling. It's like that exile that Edward Said mm-hmm. used to talk about in his writing of like, you're just kind of like, you can't go back, you know?
Yeah.
And that grief, I feel like never really goes away. It can come in waves. And I also feel like, I don't know how you guys feel about Arthur, but from the point of view of Arthur, I could sense that he regrets that he's not able to know all of Nora and that Hae-sung knows a very specific side of Nora that Arthur never will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Arthur wasn't there in Korea. Mm-hmm. He didn't grow up with Nora. And so he's missed out on Nora's childhood and what she was like as a child. And I feel like that aspect of Nora, like those are her formative years. And it's inaccessible to him. And I think the line that like really felt like a gut punch was when he said to Nora, you know, you make my life so much bigger. I just wonder if I do the same for you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Like, that's part of the grief, right? That as an immigrant, you feel that a part of you will always remain unknown, if not unknowable, to even the people closest to you in Nora's case, her husband. But I also feel like that it wasn't Nora who was expressing this grief. It was Arthur. This sense of there's this whole huge side of her, which in their daily pre-Hae-sung life, he he clearly has thought about, but he didn't have to confront it in the way that he was confronted once Hae-sung kind of came back into her life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like almost in a sense, Nora takes that lightly, or she doesn't feel it as heavily as Arthur does. And I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, but it also feels like she has the upper hand in the relationship in that sense. Like she has a more emotional power over him than he does over her. And like, that's not a criticism. It's just, you know, relationships are different. But I feel like the power to hurt is greater in her hands than it is in his. Like she seems like she would bounce back from a lot. And I'm probably speculating here, but like, I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say.
Definitely. But I also think it's really interesting because so there's that one part where like, I can't remember exactly when this happened, but Hae-sung brings up that like Nora was a crybaby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think to Arthur, I think maybe it's like when the three of them are together and Arthur's like, oh, you were? Because now she never cries, right? Because they had that conversation when they first reunited over Skype when they were both in college or like right after college. And he's like, you don't cry anymore? You used to cry all the time. And she's like, yeah, I used to cry every day. And then I got to Canada and like I cried for a while, but I realized no one cared. So then mm-hmm. I stopped crying. Mm-hmm. And so like knowing that context and then seeing how like unbothered she seems all the time, I feel like that's not that just that she's unbothered. It's that she has like made herself tough so that she doesn't, you know, like she has kind of pushed all of that down because she is ambitious. She wants to do something really important with her life. So she's like, okay, I'm compartmentalizing all that sadness and that grief and that like loneliness, whatever it was. And I'm just going to look forward. And so like, I feel like that's kind of like the way that she's decided to live her life. And so like, even if she feels that stuff, she hasn't really brought it up. It doesn't seem like she's really talked to Arthur about it. And mm-hmm. Arthur hasn't really had to think about it until now when Hae-sung came back into her life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she does feel it because like at the end of the movie, there's like this slow, it's like so slow, silent build. And she hasn't really shown much emotion during the whole movie. And then she's like sobbing in his arms, right? So I think it's like that was like kind of her breaking point where like, when Hae-sung kind of turns to her, like their last interaction, like they look at each other in silence for a long time. And then he turns away and he's like, and then before he leaves, he's like, basically, see you in our next life, meaning I'm not going to see you again in this one. And she just
breaks down.
Yeah. Like I'm crying. Right? I didn't even cry when I watched it, but like that's making me feel emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when it like really hits her.
Mm-hmm.
Because up till now she's been like giving her friend, like seeing her old friend and being excited to see him and giving him like a tour of her hometown.
Yeah, like,
and
she's like, not letting herself feel all her feelings, right? And that's really, that's a very Nora thing to do, basically.
And she has to be okay so that her husband will feel comfortable, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So she can't really feel how deeply she feels like this interaction that she's having with this person who's been so important to her because she doesn't want her husband to feel insecure. She's like taking care of his feelings too, right? And also making herself feel like I'm okay, like this is good, this is fine. You know, my life doesn't have any regrets.
Mm-hmm. And remember also like when she and Hae-sung initially like quote unquote break up, you can't call it a breakup if it wasn't a thing. So this is also part of the grief. Like they had something and it wasn't something. Like it was a something that was nothing.
Didn't even get a chance to be something.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also she called the shots there. She's the one who decided, you know, this, I just need to end it. I need to end it. Whatever it is. And like there's this, you know, like when she asks Hae-sung, like, so when are you going to come to see me? And he's like, oh, maybe in, what is it, next year or 3 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't any urgency in that. And I feel like what she was asking for was some urgency, like something to indicate that what they had meant something. And that was the moment or the point for her where she realized, like, I can't be in this in-between thing. Like, I need to make a choice. Either I stay or I go. And... even so, I was thinking like on two tracks here. So on the one hand, it's like, could she not have gone to him? And I emotionally understand why that wasn't it, because is this sexist of me to say, but like, a guy needs to show you that he wants you by chasing you. Maybe take this part out. I don't know.
No, I get it. I think we can like as have a old woman, fashioned preferences. Right,
you,
yeah.
Even though you know, like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be that way. You want it right. to be that way. Like, he needs to show you that he wants to be with you in a meaningful way. And he wasn't giving her that. And that was what she was asking for. And although like he later like describes her as, you're a person who's always leaving me, which again, amazing line. Mm-hmm. And to Arthur, she's a person who stays. Amazing line. Such
amazing
line.
Yeah.
But like these are the points where she made choices. It wasn't because they couldn't have had something. It was because neither of them at that point were willing or able to like go to the other. So like there was no meeting in the middle, there was no like promise to do so. So it's like it's either nothing or it's nothing. So there are like two kinds of nothing that you could have, and she chose to have the definite nothing rather than the indefinite nothing. Mm. If that makes sense. And I don't know if this is the point for me to talk about how I reacted to the end of the film. So I went to see it twice. And it was in cinemas here, I think, like about a month or two ago. The first time I went by myself. The second time I went with a friend. And the second time I was like, I know what's going to happen. This is fine. Because the first time I watched it, I kind of felt like, you know, slashed open. Like, oh. My guts are everywhere. My emotional guts are everywhere. But okay, let's put them back in, because that's what we do. We put them back in and we carry on with our days. So the second time the film ended and I cried a lot, uncontrollably, aww, inconsolably. Mm. And I thought about that for a long time afterwards. Like, why did I react that way? And I realized that there were things that I had also gone through that I had never cried about. And I feel like that film, like watching that and that specific story and, you know, Nora and her choices and the consequences and like those amazing, beautiful lines, it unlocked something that I had put away like a decade and a half ago. And I had never cried about them. And I thought about what Anissa, you said this, or what, I can't remember which recording you said it in, but we have, like, we've talked about this frequently, the way that, you know, dramas, stories unlock the tears that you can't cry for yourself, but somehow it rips open that box and you're like, huh. And so that was what I realized, that I had never cried about those the things that I had also gone through, like much like Nora. You just carry on. You put it all away and you carry on. And then you need to cry also.
Yeah. Yeah. But like sometimes that's something you need to do. You feel like, I feel like sometimes movies and dramas give you the permission to cry for someone else. And maybe that you didn't feel like you had that permission to cry for yourself, or crying for yourself feels too raw and too big, and so it's easier to cry about, you know, fiction, quote unquote, even no matter how real the actual feelings and emotions and the grief you're feeling are, it gives you something to like process it through, and it's like easier, you know. So yeah, I definitely believe in healing through stories.
Yeah,
amen to that.
In it.
Any other favorite lines? Oh, here's one that I really wanted to talk about. It kind of goes back to my earlier point about like the subversion of the tropes, because you would think, you know, you start the story, especially, you know, for us who are familiar with Korean media, like these, you have these childhood sweethearts. The sort of typical romantic comedy or the romance kind of plot line would be they first meet again love. As adults. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And And Arthur, I mean, he explicitly references this when they're talking, right? When he and Nora are talking, he's like, it's such a great story. I can't compete.
I'm the evil white guy.
Yeah, he's the evil white American husband that like came in the way of their destined love.
What a good story this is. Childhood sweethearts who reconnect 20 years later and realize they were meant for each other. In the story, I would be the evil white American husband standing in the way of destiny.
Shut up.
And it totally doesn't even go there. Like, there's never a time in the movie where you feel like she's going to leave her husband for him. Like, he's just this person who doesn't have anything to do with her life anymore. And yet that doesn't make it any less emotional and like gutting for them to, you know, see each other and talk about the past, because it's not really about this feeling, this whole conversation and this story about like, you know, Inyon and fate and like grief and loss and where your path is going. Like, it plays out through relationships, but it's really about like her, you know, who she is, what she wants in her life, what kind of choices she's made. And so, like, it doesn't need to have that sort of cliched plot line of, like, will they, won't they, is she gonna, you know, like.
Right. Like, that's not the interesting story.
No, and it kind of almost, like, cheapens the whole thing with something that is not even the point, really.
Yeah, not the priority.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, I think another thing that the film did really well was introduce this idea that like Na-young doesn't exist anymore. Like, there's only one form she exists in, and that's in like Hae-sung's memory.
Yeah.
Like, that person has, although, you know, it's Nora's history, it's not her present.
Yeah. Yeah, like she tells him, my mom doesn't even call me Na-young anymore. And he's like, can I still call you Na-young?
She says that.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight
the first
up
time.
To him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, that's a grief that, like, I don't know how typically people experience this, but, like, for example, like, I have a middle name, and it's the name my parents call me, but there are very few people in the world who call me that name. And sometimes you think about, like, you know, when they're not here anymore, who is going to be left who will call me that name?
Hmm.
And that is a real, like, for me, it's a real source of grief. Because who I am when I'm called that name is not the same as who I am when I'm called by the name that everyone else in the world knows me by. Like, that's like a deeper self, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt that a lot. And I feel like when Nora says to Hae-sung, you know, that girl still exists, and that she did exist, and that she was real, that was very, like...
And that I left her with you.
Exactly.
I left her with you.
Like, it's so tenderly written. And, you know, like, at that point, like, the emotional intelligence it takes to say something like that and to understand where his grief was. His grief was the friend of his childhood. Like, the woman in front of him now, like, really, he doesn't actually know her. She isn't who she used to be. And this is what happens as you grow up. Like, there are versions of you that are sort of preserved in amber for the people who knew in that time. But then, you know, we grow, we get older, we have different experiences that change who we are and how we become, not necessarily like fundamentally, but you know what I mean, right? This is why when you have a friend who has been with you like for a really long time, the level of understanding you have is different because they've known you in all of those versions.
Mm-hmm.
But then you meet someone, like, for example, that you went to high school with, and like, this can turn out well or it can turn out badly, because you know how when people meet their high school friends after not seeing them for a long time, and they're like, they revert to their high school selves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's also a thing. But I really love how the film dealt with this, you know, the way that their identities had sort of evolved and shifted, you know, bringing them to this point where when they meet again, they instinctively recognize their past selves in each other, but they also have to make peace with the fact that they're not those people anymore necessarily, and that they can't move forward from that. They have to part ways.
Yeah.
I feel like when they reunite in New York and they're just taking each other in, I feel like they were looking for traces of each other that they once knew and just kind of figuring out like whether those traces remained and like what aspects of them are new and unfamiliar to them. I feel like that was sort of what was going through their minds.
And that delight was so beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, it's you.
But you know what you just, all that stuff you just said, Zaya, I just want to point out that like in a lesser film, in the hands of a lesser filmmaker, all of that would have been explicitly said either through voiceover or by one of the characters. But instead we get all of this like really subtly through dialogue, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's this, he keeps asking her, well, like, what award do you want to win, right? So, like, when they're kids, she wants to win the Nobel Peace Prize for Literature, or no, the Nobel Prize for Literature. Or, like, she tells him that as, like, her justification of, like, why she's leaving.
Koreans don't win Nobel Prizes for Literature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then when they meet again, he's like, so what award do you want to win now? And mm-hmm. she's like, the Pulitzer. And then, like, they meet when he comes to see her in New York. He asks her again and she's like, oh, I haven't even like thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
But he like that's kind of he has this like box for her. Right. That he's yeah. like and like she could have said, oh, like you don't know me anymore. But like she doesn't need to say that. Like we get it. So she comes up with an answer. I can't even remember what the answer is now.
Tony?
Oh, a Tony. Yeah. 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 Oh, and he's like and he laughs and he's like, oh, you haven't changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see on her face what she thinks about that. But like the movie doesn't need to make that point. But like the point has been made. It's very like beautifully done. You know, it's not ham-handed and like hitting you over the head with that point.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was like really a brilliant. It's just so brilliantly written.
I agree. Really I feel is. Like the lines of dialogue are so intentional mm-hmm. and sparse. But like
exquisite.
You said, they speak volumes.
Yeah. Exactly. So much is contained within each line of dialogue. You can tell how like carefully and with so much mm-hmm. attention to detail the script was written. Anything else that you want to talk about that we haven't brought up?
So I was talking about this with a friend who pointed out that the husband character, Arthur, was their main focus, like the fact that Arthur didn't stand in the way of Nora going to meet Hae-sung, and he could have, like that, we would have taken that as a perfectly normal reaction. No, you know, you're married to me now. Stop going to meet your like childhood sweetheart mm-hmm. and see if the spark is still there. Like he's clearly coming to see you because, you know, he has something he wants to see. And he could have not trusted her, but, and I think the reason why it didn't stand out to me is because I took that trust for granted. I thought, of course he'll trust her, because isn't that why they're together? Aren't people together because they trust each other? But like, that's
not necessarily
always the case.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
But like the difference in perspective I found was really interesting because, yeah, I just assume, and of course I shouldn't, but like if I were in Arthur's position, I would trust her. You have to have that trust to be able to have a relationship. That's my criteria, I guess. And if you don't have that trust, like, is your relationship like strong enough? Is it safe? Is it, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here, but
you're very idealistic.
I'm also single, let's point out.
Well, I think also there's a difference between being like, yeah, sure, like meet him versus like go and spend 2 days alone with him.
Right.
Going on all these like kind of date-like
dates,
things.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. like they go on the Staten Island ferry. And then when they meet up for dinner, he's like, oh, we went on the Staten Island ferry. And he's like, I've never been.
Even I haven't done that yet, right?
And Nora was like, oh, we've never done that together? And I was just like, yikes. Oh, this is like, it's kind of silent for a second. I was like, ouch. So like, you can feel like he's getting little wounds and he knows that he asks her like, why is he coming? She's like, oh, on vacation. And he's like, he's coming to see you. She's like, no. And then after she meets him, she comes back. She's like, you're right. He did come to see me. And Arthur's like, yeah. And so Arthur's like, he kind of knows, but he doesn't want to be the one to stop her because he knows that's going to like do more damage mm-hmm. to their relationship in the long run, which I think is like a very wise thing to do, which is not easy to do.
Very wise and very mature.
Yeah. It's not easy because he does know that there's like this part of her that he can't access and is never going to be able to access that this other man has access to. And so even if he knows his wife is not going to leave him because she's like, you know me, I'm not going to do that. He's like, yeah, I know. But it's probably still doesn't feel great, you know?
But it's also, I guess it's something that, like, it doesn't make sense to avoid because she needs to answer those questions for herself as well. Like, you need to go and test, not in a bad way, but you need to go and test your relationship and make sure that it will stand up. Like, she can't continue in her relationship with Arthur with a niggling doubt, right? And I don't think she had that doubt, to be honest. But, like, Arthur clearly was, like, he understood that he needed to step back and let her do what she needed to do. And Hyesung needed to do what he needed to do. Like, they all needed to get through this and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Not as uninvolved as that, but, you know...
Yeah, kind of get closure on that chapter in a way.
Right.
I love Arthur. I found him so endearing.
I agree. Against my will, I was like, who is this short white guy that she's like, I was like, because, you know, you get to like that 40 minutes in and then it's like when they kind of do their non-breakup before she goes to the artist residency, it's kind of gutting because you're like,
yeah.
In that emotional roller coaster with them, right? Of like clearly like they're kind of falling in love with each other for the first time because before they were just kids. Like that's not love. That's just, you know, being sitting next to each other.
They're not falling in love. They are in love.
They are. Mm, and like both of them are afraid to actually say it. And it's really sad. Like he's like, she's like, I'm sorry. You know, after she tells him like, let's not talk anymore. And she's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, why are you sorry? Were we dating or something? Mm-hmm. And then, like, neither of them said
anything. I wanted
anything.
To smack him.
And I was like,
I'm sorry, don't act naive. You knew exactly what you were doing.
But it's, so you're, like, so completely on board and, like, rooting for them to get together, right? And then this, like, scruffy white dude shows up. And you're like,
Mark Ruffalo lookalike, like, guy comes in. And, like you said, against my will, I end up really liking him.
Yeah. And you end up being happy for like where she is and who she's with at the end.
Like, yeah. And like, I could see that they truly do love each other and they're so comfortable around each other. And as you all know, like he's very magnanimous and mature and he's also very open with her. But yeah, it was unexpected.
But this is the genius of the film, isn't it? That it can take you through all of those emotions and it can make you root for Nora and Hyesung and then make you stop rooting for them and understand why. Like, you carry the conviction that all of the choices were the right choices. And, you know, I was really surprised that I think it was even before I watched the film because I didn't watch any of these YouTube videos, but, like, YouTube was full of... Like, my feed was throwing up all sorts of, like, the ending of Past Lives Explained. And I was like, after I watched it, I didn't understand what needed explaining. Like, what are we explaining here? It's very clear. Mm-hmm. I don't see any... it's not ambiguous.
Mm-mm.
You might not like the ending, and I don't agree with that, but I can understand if, you know, that wasn't the film you wanted to watch. But, like, it wasn't ambiguous. What are people confused about? Yeah.
I think also, like... The film is so, like you said, from the first scene, you feel comfortable with, like, wherever this story is taking me, I'm on board. Like, you get the sense from that scene, first scene, that you can really trust, you know, the team that made this movie because they know what they're doing, they know where they're going, and you're in good hands, you know? So even when you have that moment where, like, you have the second time skip and they're coming back to New York at the airport and she's like, we're married, and I was kind of in the middle in my heart, I was like, oh no, it's too late. But at the same time, you're like, okay, I trust where this film stick can be so far. I'm like, wherever this is going, even if it's not where I was like hoping it would go, I'm on board, because I didn't know any spoilers going into this. You just feel carried in the best way throughout the whole movie. Whereas, like, sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, okay, I'm on board. And then, like, things start happening and you're like, wait, where? Like, and then you get like halfway through the movie and you're like, how is this going to end? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm on board for this anymore. So I felt I felt really comfortable about where the story was going to go because it was just so well told. And you felt like you were watching real people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is Celine Song's actual directorial debut. Like, this is her first feature film that she wrote and directed.
Which is insane.
Yeah, I was reading that, like, she wrote the screenplay and then A24 was like, you are so inextricably linked to this script. You should direct it. Which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yo, you mean she had no plans to direct it?
Mm-mm.
A first time
woman
of color director being given the reins to her own story.
Yeah.
It's rare.
You don't understand the jealousy I feel about not being able to have written. Well, not the exact same story, but like a story like this. You know, it reminded me of this other, it was a drama special, which also when I finished watching, I was like, I wish I had written this. What was it called? If We Were a Season, you know, with Choi Soo-bin and Jang Dong-yoon. So it's not like as mature as... Oh,
I seen
you need
it
to watch
either.
It. Watch it. It's not a film. It is a drama special. So don't like think of it as the same kind of, you know.
Mm.
But it's just perfectly told. Like the emotional beats are absolutely perfect. And those two actors are amazing. Like, I love Choi Soo-bin and Jang Dong-yoon is amazing. So, highly recommend.
Yeah, you know what it also reminded me of? Always down to watch more Choi Soo-bin. What did
so,
it remind you of?
It also reminded me a little bit of, like, Elemental, which my sister had told me a few months ago she'd gone to see. And she was like, Afa, you need to go and see this. It's like, it's your life. And I had the opportunity, so I did. And it's like, it's this like Disney Pixar animated thing. And then as the credits rolled, there was a point in the middle where a certain scene happened. I was like, there's got to be a Korean on the team. Like this,
yeah,
there's
Peter
no
Song
way.
Is the director.
Right. See, I didn't know that. I just don't know anything. I recently started my cinema going career when I discovered that my phone tariff gives me like £3 cinema tickets every week.
So, nice.
So I've been watching... all sorts of random things that I would never normally watch. Like, I can't sit at home and watch a film. I just can't. I don't have the concentration for that. If I had tried to watch Past Lives at home, I would have watched like 1 minute and then gone away and forgotten about it and then tried to watch it again 3 more times and got a minute further each time and that's it. Like, I need to be held captive in a cinema to watch a film to the end. That is just like that emotional... realism that I feel Eastern storytelling prioritizes. I don't know if I phrased that like properly, but there's that emotional core to the story which sort of resists simplification. And I think like Past Lives is very exemplary of that. Like the best stories are the ones that resist simplification.
Hmm.
Elemental was cute.
No, I haven't seen Elemental, but
I highly recommend. It's really lovely and heartwarming and has a really nice soundtrack.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I should watch it, especially because I had heard about that sort of like it could very much be read as like an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it is
like the
kind
story
of
like two immigrant families and like the romance between.
But it's
it's
so subtly done that you like you don't need to like it doesn't ethnically code the characters because they're like elements, right? There's fire and water and air and all of that. But it is like it's subtle, but also not so subtle that you miss it. Like, it's done in a very
elegant
way.
I saw the part
way.
Of the trailer where he's, like, trying to eat the fire food and it's, like, too spicy for him. I was like, oh, that's the white boyfriend going to
yeah, the love across
girlfriend's
divides.
Parents' house. Yeah, trying to eat their food and being like, oh, my God.
But also, like, the fire people, fire element guys? I can't remember what they're
called. The Fire Nation?
The Fire Nation. They're like outcasts and, you know, they move to like Elemental City. I can't remember what it's called. But like they move to the city where everyone like looks at them like, you know, you don't belong here, and they're pushed out. And like, you know, they don't receive, for example, government funding for like, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's a lot. It's like it's all put in there and it's just so well done. Actually, it's not that similar to Past Lives.
But well, there you go. You got an extra review for the price of one. Yeah, yeah. You got an extra little mini review. You thought you were just going to come here for Past Lives. I feel like we kind of put a really nice bow on our conversation. Is there anything else that y'all want to talk about in terms of Past Lives?
We can talk about the cast. I don't know if you know this, but I was following any news regarding Past Lives forever because I was just so excited to watch it. But Chaoshik was actually attached to this film.
Really?
He was, yeah. I remember reading that and being like, oh.
As Hae-sung.
I'm guessing it was like for the role of Hae-sung. But then when the movie came out and I saw the promos and I saw Tae-yu instead, I was like, I much prefer this casting choice.
Yes, I agree.
It worked really well.
I've always been a fan of him ever since I saw him in Soul Searching. And probably because he's German, like Korean-German.
Oh, interesting.
I think, yeah, he has this kind of like demeanor that worked really well in this movie where
like he has a slight stiffness to him as well.
There is a stiffness to him, yeah. And
but
I thought
not in
it
a bad
worked
way.
Super
like
well.
It,
no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought it worked perfectly for the character of Hae-sung. And so I was really happy to hear that, you know, he was in this movie. And then I was surprised by Greta Lee too, because I feel like she's not in a lot of stuff. I don't think I've seen her in many films or series where she's like the lead. And I feel like this is the first time that I saw her as like the lead in a feature film. And I was really pleasantly surprised by her Korean. Like I was worried that like, oh, what if she like speaks Korean poorly and it's like really awkward. But the way she spoke in Korean made me feel very at ease because I can relate to that.
Like it was slightly awkward.
She speaks like a gyopo, right? Because she is one.
She is a gyopo, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So it's like a little bit rusty. And I mean, he even points it out. He's like, your Korean's really rusty. She's like, well, I only talk Korean to you and my mom. So, you know, like deal with it. Or that moment where she's like trying to message him on Facebook and she's like, oh shit, like how do I
spell? She has to like write down the keyboard letters on paper. Yeah.
So real.
Yeah. I was so pleasantly surprised by her performance. And I thought that she was great.
Even like her acting is a little bit more effortful when she's speaking in Korean.
Yes.
But it makes sense, right? Because that's not her first language anymore. So she does have to think a little bit more about what she says to him. And it was also like interesting because like there's all that language barrier stuff, right? Like Arthur and Hae-sung can't really speak to each other that fluently because neither of them is really good enough in the other language to be able to speak to each other. But then even Hae-sung and Nora, like they only communicate in Korean. So she can no longer express herself to him in the language that she, and she's a writer. Like, so English, she's like amazing at English. She's amazing at expressing herself in English, but she can no longer like express that full self to him. And so like the casting choice and the way that she performs it is so perfectly done. I mean, I don't know if that's like her level of Korean in real life, but she played it so well, I think.
I agree.
She did not come across as someone who grew up in Canada. I was like, this is an LA
girl. Oh, really?
Yeah, but I was like, that's okay. That's like a minor detail that nobody else cares about except me. So.
She wasn't giving Toronto vibes.
No, I was like very much like, even before I knew that she grew up in LA, I was like, this is West Coast person.
How would that have looked? I'm really curious. I don't know if you can quantify.
I don't know. Just like, because she doesn't move to the US until she's an adult. And so like, It's, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, she doesn't at all have a Canadian accent. Curious. She doesn't like, have the vibe of someone who grew up in Toronto. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it, really. But it's partly, it's mostly in how she speaks and carries herself.
Interesting.
It's not a big deal, honestly.
I know.
I can tell, but no one else would be able to tell.
If you saw it and it felt right to you, like, you would know, like, oh, that's the Toronto
Like,
vibe.
For example... So I watched Turning Red when that came out, which is made by a Chinese-Canadian filmmaker. Yeah. And, like, yes, it has the subway and the streetcar and, like, all of the sort of, like, the visual cues of Toronto. But also, like, you can tell that a Canadian made this, you know? Like, just in the way that, like, they feel a little bit Canadian. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, Americans probably wouldn't pick up on that. But it's just, like, a fun little, you know, extra
interesting
detail. Yeah, for sure. But it's, again, not like an
issue. I know it's not, but I just, I'm like, I feel like I'm missing out and I wish I could pick this up too, but obviously I can't.
Yeah. I think also, like, as Americans, we know, like, East Coast Asians versus, like, West Coast Asians. Yep. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Toronto Asians are more like East Coast Asians, if that, like, explains it better. I know, Saya, you're probably just like, I don't know what that means.
If you're not sure, watch Beef.
Watch Beef. Yeah,
watch Beef, and because they have, like, the perfect depiction of, like, OC Koreans and, like, LA Koreans, as well as, like, OC church going Koreans. Like, you watch it and ask someone who grew up in the OC and went to church, like, it's spot on. There are these subtle distinctions that you just feel.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So this was really great. Thank you so much for joining us, Yuna.
Thank you for having me.
As always, such a pleasure. And also, you have so many smart things to say. We always appreciate them.
I learned from the best.
Thanks for making time, despite the crazy time difference. Yeah, the time zones. We made it happen. Yeah. So where can people find you on the internet? Or do you want them to find you? Because you don't have to be found.
Yeah. I have an Instagram. It's more of a personal Instagram. My handle is @unanimous. It's a pun. Play on words with my name.
Great pun.
It's @unanimous.
You'll give us a heads up if there's another film that we should look out for. That is
as good
as this.
I will.
Yeah, when you hear the little advanced buzz through your, you know, special channels, definitely let us know.
I don't know if I get much advanced buzz anymore now that I'm in Tokyo, but I definitely try to keep a pulse on the entertainment industry, both in Hollywood and, of course, Korea. But you guys are also pretty good at staying on top of that, too.
And where can people find us, Saya?
They can find us on the Twitters, which we are refusing to call by the other name, @DramasOverflow. And they can find me @NotNowSaya.
And you can find me on Twitter @AnisaKhalifa_. You can find us on Instagram @DramasOverflowers_ and email us @DramasOverflowers@gmail.com.
And be sure to sign up for our newsletter, either with the link in the description or just go straight on over to dramasoverflowers.substack.com.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.